could he do that?
Are you on drugs? What?
Charles Darwin.
Welcome everybody back into Nerd Sesh. As always, I'm Carson Brabber, and alongside me is Logan Camden. And today, Logan, we've got a lot of football to talk about because we just saw a very exciting Thursday night game, remarkably, among a couple of NFC East teams. But yes, apparently they can be entertaining as well. And we, of course, have the upcoming week of action to discuss, and we have all of week one to reflect on. So we're going to do a little bit of all that today, but we're going to start just by talking about what we saw last night, what ended up being a 30-29 victory for the Washington football team over the New York Giants. Initially, it appeared to be a New York victory after Dustin Hopkins missed a field goal, but then it was ruled that Dexter Lawrence had stepped off sides. Next thing you know, Hoopers don't miss the reload, as they say, and Dustin Hopkins went up and pretty much just nailed that thing. So, just broadly to begin, what did we learn from that game? What are some of the takeaways that stand out to you?
Well, I'm going to start with a guy that I've been very critical of, and I'm actually in the works of a YouTube video on right now.
Woo!
The enigma that is Daniel Jones. And my biggest takeaway from this game is, and this is something I touch on in the video, Daniel Jones has the raw tools to be a dominant quarterback and showed flashes in this game. And I think first, we have to touch with how the offense ran against Washington. It's Carson, finally they worked to this man's strengths. Mm-hmm. He's a fast quarterback, and you have a dynamic running back that draws a lot of attention in the box. So what do? They run a ton of read option, and it shredded the football team's mm-hmm. defense. I mean, it killed them. Like, I don't know, like, with as much talent that's on that defensive line, you wouldn't expect that to happen. As smart as this defense is and how consistently dominant they have been at shutting down everything, you wouldn't figure they would continually bite on that stuff, but they did. The read option continually worked. Jones broke away and had that big touchdown run that got called back still. They ended up getting about 50 yards on that play, but it wasn't just that the offensive playbook opened up and they finally allowed Jones to maximize his abilities. He was better at sensing pressure, I felt like, in this game, and that has been a continual issue in Jones' game. He spotted defensive linemen coming at him. We know how agile he is. Again, he showed how quick and how fast and how dynamic as a runner he can be. And again, this is in extenuating circumstances. Since 2019, I believe Next Gen Stats came out with this, he has faced the most pressure in the NFL since 2019. This offensive line still has not improved. And outside of just like sensing pressure and his mobility, he threw a beautiful deep ball to Darius Slayton. Again, last year he was the best deep ball thrower in the NFL, according to NFL's Next Gen Stats. He had the highest passer rating of any quarterback. Like, Jones has continually showed flashes, and that is the issue that I have with him, and that's the issue that everybody has with him. He has such high highs and such low lows, but I just can't quit on the kid when he can do something like this. Like, I don't know if it's going to take, and I want to flesh this out, Carson. Like, what do you think it's going to take? Does the offense need to lean into him being a runner more? Do they just need to try to be more dynamic? Has that been the biggest issue? Like, how do we maximize Daniel Jones and get the best out of this kid?
I think unequivocally you have to weaponize his feet more because that's his most impressive trait. And you look at him, and up in his career up to this point, he's averaged basically 4 rushing attempts a game, which, given the fact that he averages 6.6 yards per attempt, that's just not enough looks on the ground. When I think that, again, that's the most impressive, most distinctive thing that he does. And you compare that to other running quarterbacks, like take a Josh Allen, a guy where it's not his primary weapon, but he can do damage with his feet. He's attempted 7 attempts per game on the ground in his career thus far. So that's almost double what we've seen out of Danny Dimes. And I think that you saw how much it opened up for this offense in this game where he goes 9 carries for 95 yards and a touchdown. I think that you're absolutely right about the effectiveness of him running out of options. I think scrambling. And I just think that the threat of him on his feet, the more active it is, the more that it simplifies his role as a passer, the more that it makes that short and intermediate game effective. And that's really what you need from him because this offense has just been so bad. Most games you're going up against the Washington football team, you're not going to allow 30 points. Like, this was a really good all-around offensive performance from the Giants, and you said it. There was a missed opportunity on that deep ball to Slayton. There were a number of penalties in this game, so they didn't finish touchdowns in the red zone. They were just 1 of 3 in their attempts there. So this could have been a real offensive explosion, and I think that although Danny Dimes is really a mixed bag, and I don't think he throws a pretty ball, I don't really like how the ball comes out of his hand, and you know, there wasn't a bunch of dynamic plays through the air. When he can establish himself on the ground like this, he can look like a starting quarterback. He just can't be your traditional great pocket passer, but use his versatility. Use the fact that he has multiple skill sets to your advantage. Like, do the Eagles shy away from running Jalen Hurts? No. And I think Jalen Hurts is a probably more solid pocket passer than Danny Dimes already. So use his best strength to his advantage, and I thought that's what they did in this one.
I want to touch on that point that you just made about the red zone trips. Atrocious at finishing drives. I mean, that's what ultimately killed the Giants in this one football game. Gano made, what, 5 field goals? You can't have that. More importantly, the end of this game, 3 minutes left. Taylor Heinicke throws an interception to James Bradberry. Also, I want to give credit to Bradberry. What a jump on that route, dude. Mm-hmm. That was reminiscent of Malcolm Butler jumping that slant route in the Super Bowl. Maybe even better. Like, McLaurin didn't have a chance at catching that football. Regardless, after you get that turnover, you have amazing field position. You have to finish that drive.
Yeah.
You win this game. You put it completely away if you score there, and yet you settle for another Graham Gano field goal and give Taylor Heinicke and this football team offense 2 minutes to operate. You just can't do that. I think if the Giants finish one of these drives, they win this game. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing about Jones as a quarterback in this offense that was so frustrating about last night, is just continually getting stopped at the 30, at the 40. And I don't think it was because of the impressiveness of the football team's defense. It was just the Giants slowing down when it came to those trips and making questionable decisions, too. I don't like running the football there at the end of the game after the Bradberry pick. I would give Daniel Jones 3 opportunities in the air or on the ground to go and get that first down. Regardless, the Giants have to finish those drives, and that's why they lost this game.
Yeah, and I just think overall, big play situations, they were not good enough. Third downs, they were 4 of 12. Those are just the kind of things that are going to kill you. And if you look at their offense, which was, again, pretty much inept last year, they were atrocious in those categories. Converted on 36% of their third downs. That was 29th in football. Converted on 46% of their red zone opportunities as far as getting a touchdown. That was 31st in football. So it's those situational things that will really make the distinction between a good offense and a bad offense. And clearly that's where we haven't seen Danny Dimes step up and excel, even in a game like this where overall I do think he was pretty darn good. But I think you touched on another important point there, which is that it's not like this is a game in which you give tremendous praise to the Washington football team overall. I thought that they were still able to generate pressure, of course, as you always see, but they didn't have an answer to Danny Dimes. And by the way, I pretty much am only going to call him Danny Dimes just because I like it. On the ground, they allowed in total almost 400 yards, which is more than the Giants had in any game last year. And you're letting that up in week two. And as we've talked about, the missed opportunities from New York, it took that drop by Darius Slayton. It took them not finishing drives in the red zone. It took an offsides penalty when the game was over for them to beat the Giants at home by 1 point. So that, to me, it just has to be jarring for Washington football team supporters like yourself, because even though Taylor Heinicke went out and played, honestly, a pretty solid game here and didn't have that turnover until the end when, yes, that was rough, but even that, more just an incredible defensive play, and you're still getting into a kind of battle like this against a team that is not very good and just got blown off the field in week one. I just thought not a very good performance from the Washington football team, and I don't think they deserve to win this game.
Yeah, no, I agree. They didn't deserve to win this game. It was a fluke. Like, if Dustin Hopkins misses that field goal, they don't deserve it. And then offsides, it's close. Dexter Lawrence was clearly offsides, but you just hate to lose a game like that, especially when he misses the kick.
I don't think it was close. I think he was clearly offsides, but I agree. Very painful.
Overall, though, on the football team, and I want to touch on Heinicke as well. We'll touch on the defense and him. Starting with the defense, I think you hit it on the head. This pass rush needs to be feared, and that's the strong thing that you can always come away with this from Washington's defense. They pressured Jones on 17 of his 36 dropbacks. Sweat had 7. Allen had 5. Ioannidis had 4. Payne had 4. And Chase Young had 3 as well. They're really good at getting to the passer, but I think you hit it, Carson. There are holes in this defense. There are a lot of holes. And you start with the secondary. I didn't expect this to be an issue. They bring in William Jackson III. Carson, William Jackson got burnt 2 or 3 times in this game badly. That touchdown to Darius Slayton, I don't know if it was him or, no, excuse me, I keep saying touchdown because it should have been a touchdown. That deep ball that Slayton dropped in the end zone should have been a TD. I don't know if it was a miscommunication and William thought that there was a high safety back there, either in a cover one or a cover two. No safety drop back. Jackson, I guess, I think it was man-to-man and he just missed his coverage. He had a couple really bad plays on the other side. Like, Kendall Fuller played okay. I think there are just definite holes in the secondary and over the middle with the linebacking core. Davis needs to step up and play a bigger role in this pass coverage. I just think I overestimated how dominant this pass rush could, you know, really affect overall defense because, yes, this pass rush is probably one of the best, like top three in the league still. I genuinely believe that with all the talent here, but there are holes in this linebacking core. There are holes in the secondary. And I just think as the season progresses, we're going to see it. I think we're going to see it become more and more of a persistent issue. Like, if you're allowing Daniel Jones to carve you up over the middle of the field like this, even when you're generating pressure, that's not a good sign whatsoever. Like, that spells doom for the Washington football team's defense the rest of the way.
I agree. And this is what I said to you before the year. I expected a bit of regression. They still have their young core of great pass rushers, and that is all fine and dandy, but compared to other elite defenses, I think you're right. I don't know how the second and third levels compare, and just generally speaking, that's not going to be enough to win you a bunch of games if you can't put up volume scoring numbers. Now, that was not the issue for them in this game, and I think we should give props to the playmakers, because it's not just that Heinicke played a good game and really has consistently done so when he's been asked to and when he's had to step up in a role like this. 336 yards, two touchdowns, 34 of 46 in this one. But again, it's the playmakers. And specifically, I look at one drive because this game was, I would say, sort of in New York's control as we got into the late third quarter and then the early fourth. They took that six-point lead and then they held on to it. And then right after they have a field goal drive, the Washington football team comes out and in two plays, they've marched down the entirety of the field and they've scored a touchdown because of a dynamic catch and run by J.D. McKissic, which went for 56 yards, and then a remarkable ball and catch by Ricky Seals-Jones. And I thought that Terry McLaurin, with the exception of that one play on which he got dogged by Bradbury, was excellent. He had 11 catches for 107 yards. Logan Thomas had a very solid game. So the Washington football team, they have playmakers on that end. It's just not going to be enough to me. And I think the defense is going to be better than what we saw in this one because letting up 29 points to the Giants is not good. But I don't know if the offense is going to produce like this every time out because Antonio Gibson was efficient on the ground. Again, they were good through the air. They had all these things go right for them, and it still comes down to a one-point game at home against the New York Giants.
Yeah, I don't think you can expect this. There's a few things I want to touch on here. I don't think you can expect this every week in, week out from the Washington football team, but I do think they have a really dynamic offense with playmakers. Like, I'm not expecting 30 points every night, but I don't think 23 to 24 is out of the realm of possibility. And Carson, another thing here. The only reason I think this defense got carved up as bad as they did, granted, the passing issues, I think, again, will persist. I don't think that the coverage issues go away. I don't think any quarterback's going to be able to run on this team the way that Daniel Jones did. And what I mean by that is I think Ron Rivera has to make this a point of emphasis heading in the rest of the season. You cannot be this poor against the read option. The read option was really cool in 2012 through 2014 when the NFL acted like they had never seen it before. And, you know, Colin Kaepernick and Russell Wilson and all these quarterbacks, Robert Griffin III, they're all using it to their advantage. It shouldn't work in the NFL because guys should be smart enough to read this. Like, I think it's going to be a point of emphasis, and I also just don't think any quarterback is going to run on them. I think they make adjustments to shut something like this down the rest of this season. I just can't imagine another quarterback running on them like this.
Well, I will say, they have a schedule in which they're going to be tested in that respect many times. They have the Bills with the mobile guy and Josh Allen. They have even Patrick Mahomes, Jameis Winston. Those aren't guys who are going to have a bunch of design runs. They're not going to run a ton of read option, but guys who can scramble and make plays with their feet. They have to face Daniel Jones again. They have to face Jalen Hurts twice. They have to face Teddy Bridgewater. They have to face Russell Wilson, another scrambling quarterback. But a lot of those guys, running is sort of fundamentally to who they are. So you cannot have another performance like this, because if you do, that's affecting half your games on the year, and this elite defense is suddenly just a pretty good defense.
Yeah, and I will say, on my overall prediction for the football team, I think I probably did. I juiced them. Like, I'm not out on this team. I think
you juiced them up. You juiced them up a good bit to 11 wins.
I think they're an 8 or 9 win team, and that's respectable. I did overestimate them a little bit, but I do think there are a lot of positive signs on this offense, Carson. You know, you talk about, I don't expect this to be a 30-point-per-game offense, but again, I don't think 24, 25 a night is completely crazy. Taylor Heinicke, and this is another big takeaway that I had from this game, Taylor Heinicke should have already been the Washington football team starting quarterback and is the best option for them moving forward. And I think that's clear and obvious to see. I said this in in the summer, distinctly, with my good friend Sam Dietrich, who I played disc golf with. I remember on the course with him, we had a 10-minute conversation about what a quarterback Taylor Heinicke was. Obviously, this was stemming from the Tampa Bay game, where he looked electric in. But there are just so many things that he does well. First, I want to touch on, this kid is so aware. He processes and reads the game at such a quick, high level. The decisions he makes are just quick. Like, he just he processes the game so fast. And if you want to look at the polar opposite, I've banged the drum on this kid a ton. Mason Rudolph. Go watch some Mason Rudolph highlights right now. You'll see a quarterback that processes the game at a slow level. I'll let you make the distinction for yourself. But he's pinpoint accurate, Carson. He put a lot of balls right on the money, specifically the one you talked about, that Ricky Seals-Jones touchdown, really reminiscent of that Santonio Holmes TD. And what was really special, man, in the play action, Heinicke was damn near perfect. 13 of 15, 153 yards, two TDs, and you talk about his speed. He's not afraid to scramble and get out of the pocket. When New York brought that pressure home, he was moving. He was getting away from it, and he's got that swagger about him, man. That swagger factor to him, where he's just Heinicke's a baller, man. He's got that confidence about him where he's expecting to do big things. Also, I don't want to fully just give all of the credit to Taylor Heinicke here. This is a really well play calling game by Scott Turner. That TD to I believe it was McLaurin in the red zone. That little slant pick play, great play call by Scott Turner. Drags the two defenders down to the guy on the curl route. Opens up that back end level for McLaurin on the slant. So Heinicke deserves a lot of credit. But Carson, I just think that there is a real big ceiling for this team moving forward, because I think Heinicke is their best option. You've got a talented receiving option in the backfield, McKissic. You've got a talented runner in Gibson. You've got weapons. You've got weapons here in Diami Brown, Terry McLaurin, Logan Thomas. I don't think this offense is as bad as we originally anticipated. I think this offense can be a lot better, and I think that all the factors that I mentioned, as well as the play calling, an excellent play game called by Scott Turner. I'm really high on this Washington offense.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm all the way there with you. And I think that, by the way, you talk about even 8 or 9 wins. I don't think the football team is getting there. I had them at 7-10 before the year, but just looking at the schedule they have ahead of them, even the games where you look at and think, okay, they're on level footing with that team, or maybe they're even a little bit better, they're on the road for. They go to Atlanta. They go to Denver, who I think a lot of people would say is probably even a little bit better straight up, but nonetheless, same tier probably. They go to Carolina. They go to Oakland. They go to Philly, obviously host Philly one time as well. They go to New York.
Run that one 2 games back.
The last two?
No, they go where?
To Philly, but they also host Philly.
Or they go to Vegas, not Oakland.
Wow, Logan. Well, I really can't get that through my skull, can I? They're actually going to go to Oakland. They're going to play not the Warriors either, because they're not there anymore. They're going to play the A's, but the A's aren't going to be there for very long either. So I'm not a football team optimist. Let's put this in perspective, though. Because the NFC East thus far, I think, has clearly improved from what it was last year. We're not going to have another 7-win division champion. But if you were to rank those teams top to bottom, let's just go through. Who's holding down that top spot right now?
Yeah, this hurts my soul to say out loud, but the Dallas Cowboys still have my top spot. They're just so clearly far and ahead of every other team in this division offensively, and that matters. If there's anything that I can trust in this division, it's the Dallas Cowboys to put up points.
Yeah.
And you can't really trust anything else about any of these other teams. So that's really just my distinction. I'd probably have the football team second. Are you in concurrence with me? Do you think the Cowboys are the clear-cut team at the top in the NFC East?
I do. I think that you put it well. They are elite at something.
Yeah.
And that basically does not apply for any other team in this division except for that Washington football team pass rush, but maybe not that overall defense as we touched on. So I think that the Cowboys are at the top. I wouldn't have the Washington football team second. In fact, I'm going to stay strong to what I had preseason, which was both they and the Eagles go 7-10, but give me the tiebreaker to the Eagles. I just think that offense is a higher ceiling. And defensively, I think they're probably going to be a little bit better than we gave them credit for. I think they're a really solid all-around team. I think they're going to run the ball really well. I think they have their clear number one receiver. And as I said earlier in the week, I like their weapons more than we maybe initially gave them credit for. I just think it's a really solid all-around team. And, by the way, they have the second-best quarterback in this division, and I think that really matters.
This is one I went really... I'm going with the football team second, but it's one that I debated with myself back and forth a lot. Like you said, I love the weapons here more than any other team outside of the Cowboys. Hurts, Sanders, Smith, scary trio. Scary young trio moving forward. And then defensively, maybe this is a hot take. Honestly, dude, I don't think the Eagles' pass rush is that far behind the football teams in many respects.
No.
Like, you've still got a guy in Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave, who in the interior are just, they're monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Hargrave, and I harped on this kid, man, when he was back in Pittsburgh. I believe he had 6 sacks in the interior back when he was with the Steelers. The kid's a beast, okay? Flat out. The kid's a beast. Him and Fletcher Cox are dangerous up the middle. You return Brandon Graham. It's tough. I'm going to lean football team, probably mistakenly, probably foolishly. I'm going to lean football team in my second spot because I like their pass rush that much. And because I'm riding with Taylor Heinicke and because I just can't completely bail on this stupid take that I made preseason. So I'll stick with the football team in my 2 spot, but it's something that I'm not confident in moving forward. Like, there is a world in which this offense just bottoms out and we see them put up, you know, 16 points over the next couple of weeks. But for now, I will ride with them, but it is very neck and neck in my eyes between the Eagles and football team.
And I don't think that's ludicrous. I don't think there's a great deal of separation between them at this point, but I think you're correct in identifying that really strong Philly pass rush. So this means that we both have the Giants holding down the 4 spot, which I know there are some big New York believers out there. Our friend Peyton T. Gallagher told us whilst we sat in his home talking about how we thought the Giants were going to win 6 games that he thought they could be the second best team in the NFC. Why are they instead the worst team in the division?
I'm sorry, bro. That was just... Peyton, I love you, brother, but damn, that was a bad take.
Well, Mr. Washington football team is going to win 11 games over here.
Hey, I guess I'm one to talk the pot calling the kettle black. The Giants, like, dude, I don't think the Giants are that far off either. That's what's messed up.
I think they're
super close to the Eagles in football team talent-wise. And again, the distinction is Daniel Jones. Like, they have the potential to have the second-best offense in this division as well. Like, the talent's there. What we saw against the football team... Again, if they open up that dynamism of Daniel Jones on the ground, this offense could easily be the second best in the division. They're super talented. The connection between Jones and Galladay is solid. The connection between Jones and Slayton is solid.
Mm-hmm.
And went to Ingram over the middle, too. And again, defensively, still a pretty solid squad. Like, I don't know how Taylor Heinicke carves up this team for 30 points, but the talent is all there, too. Logan Ryan and James Bradbury anchoring the secondary once more. I think the pass rush has to get home a little more for the Giants, and I think the middle of the field, I think Blake Martinez has to step up in pass coverage and do a better job at run stuffing, but the Giants aren't that far off. If we see in the next couple weeks, Carson, if Daniel Jones cuts down on his turnovers a little bit, shows us that he has more on the ground, and he, you know, is on with his deep ball, maybe I bump the Giants over. Maybe I could maybe see the Giants being bumped up to 2.
Yeah. No, I agree. The margins are pretty slim. I'm not at that point right now. I'll ask you one more question, and we may have this discussion several times throughout this year because we're early on. But right now, if you were going to project to week 1 of next year between Daniel Jones and Taylor Heinicke, are either one of them the starters for their respective teams?
I love this question, and I want to hear your opinion on it as well. It's so tough after a game like this. Because again, like the enigma that is Daniel Jones, I trust Daniel Jones to do 2 things. To fool the you-know-what out of me and to show me those
pajamas.
Flashes. Yeah, let's go with that. let's go with pajamas. Honestly, Carson, I'm decently confident in Taylor Heinicke retaining this job. The football team have a reluctancy to move on in that respect. Like, instead of drafting a quarterback this offseason after whiffing on Dwayne Haskins, they have to go the Ryan Fitzpatrick route. My gut is telling me that Daniel Jones will not be the quarterback in New York. You saw the frustration from a guy like Max Kellerman, and I feel like that's a sentiment that a lot of Giants fans hold. This game was promising, and if we see a few more weeks of this, then the Giants are probably going to cash in and bring him back for another season. But I don't trust that to happen. I trust Daniel Jones to turn the ball over a lot and lose the Giants football games and be unaware in the pocket. Like, there's Daniel. God, man, Daniel Jones is such a confusing fella. He is just the most confusing dude.
Yeah. Here's what I think. I disagree with you that Taylor Heinicke is going to be the guy for the football team because I don't know how you look at this team and say, with the talent we have on this young defensive line, with the young weapons we have, we're content to invest in a 28-year-old who we can win 7-8 games under.
What has he shown you Like, what deficiencies in his game has he shown you, Carson?
It's not a matter of deficiencies. It's a matter of trying to create a Super Bowl ceiling. And what's unfortunate for them is they're not going to have a top five pick unless they actively trade up and put themselves in that position, because they're not going to suck. I'm not saying that Taylor Heinicke isn't a journeyman starting quarterback. I'm telling you that he's not a franchise quarterback. He's not a guy who a team is going to look at and say, yes, he's carrying us into the promised land. Maybe he's on the roster next year. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And I think he's a really high-level backup and low-level starter in this league.
Yeah.
You're looking at me like you're dead inside. Like I'm breaking news that Taylor Heinicke isn't a guy who a bunch of teams are going to build their futures around.
I don't know. I mean, he's a Virginia boy. I want the kid to succeed. I've seen him. All I'm saying, I'm not saying that you're not wrong, because you're probably right, Carson. You're probably right. This kid's just a journeyman-level, borderline starter caliber talent. But what I have seen in two games out of Taylor Heinicke makes me believe that there is a higher ceiling and a higher calling for him, that there is a future for him in this league and with this team.
Okay. Why do you think he didn't beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick for the job then?
That is the question that I would love the answer for, Carson. Why did this kid get cut from four rosters back in 2015? Why did this kid not play a snap in the XFL? Why did this kid not play a snap in whatever that other, with AAFL? Why didn't he play a snap in any of these places? It's a great question. There must be something that I'm missing.
Yeah, and here's the reality. We've seen him play two games of football, so there very well may be something that just hasn't revealed itself yet. And overall, if you're looking at his stats as a starter, he's thrown four touchdowns to two picks in those last two games. He's thrown for over 300 yards in both of them, had a lot of attempts. So I think that he's a very solid all-around quarterback, but I also, again, don't think when you have this much talent elsewhere on your roster, he's the guy you're going to look at and say, at 28, yes, we want you. We want you, Taylor.
So can you – I don't want to spend too long on this segment, but I have a question for you then.
Yeah.
Name a quarterback that is like the – name a quarterback like at a talent level that you would take over Taylor Heinicke if they came up in free agency.
Like the first guy?
Yes.
That's tough. I'm trying to think through like the low-level starters where it's you put him in the right situation. I'd say maybe he's on par with like a Sam Darnold.
I don't mean direct talent. I mean somebody that you would, I guess that you would replace Heinicke with, that you'd be confident would be better than Heinicke moving forward. Or is Darnold that guy?
Well, no, my point is you want somebody who's a significant step up. You don't want a guy who is 4%
better.
That's what
I'm saying. Who is that significant step up that could be available?
There's a lot of guys who could be available. I'm not sure. I think that it's very possible that their move is actually try to trade up for the draft. Because if you feel confident about so much of the rest of your roster, go swing big on this one position. So I don't know if that's what we actually see them do, but it is a possibility. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. On the other half, we've got lots more football to talk. We're going to be asking some of our biggest questions after week one, and then on the tail end, previewing a game or two that stick out to us that we are going to see this upcoming weekend. You're listening to Nerd Sesh on Blaze Radio and BlazeRadioOnline.com. Welcome, everybody, back. Hope you enjoyed that quick break. So, Logan, on our Monday show, our Monday podcast, we did a good bit of talking about some of our biggest takeaways from week one of NFL action. One of the storylines that we didn't address as much, though, was the performance of the several starting rookie quarterbacks who we saw out there. Mac Jones, we saw obviously for the Patriots, Trevor Lawrence for the Jags, and Zach Wilson for the Jets. And then we saw a little bit of both Justin Fields and Trey Lance. But out of that group, who would you say was most impressive to you?
To me, it was Trevor Lawrence by a landslide. And I want to give a shout-out to the members of Draft Dynamite for asking this question on Twitter, spurring a little bit of discussion. Look, dude, I went, you know, Carson, I'm an avid user of the app Instagram, right? You know,
What's that?
You know the app where you, like, share pictures of stuff that, like you know, you're interested in or pictures you took?
Right, MySpace.
You're familiar, right?
MySpace, yeah.
Yeah, essentially. So I'm scrolling through the comment section. And they're talking about the rookie of the week on the NFL Instagram page. Mm-hmm. All the comments, I cannot believe you put Trevor Lawrence on here. Look here, dingus, doofus, whatever. You're an imbecile, all right? Please stop watching football. If you don't think Trevor Lawrence deserved that, like, dude, I don't care that he threw three interceptions. I don't care about any of the issues that he had. Trevor Lawrence impressed the hell out of me after week one. Yes, he threw three picks. I'm going to touch on each one of them here. First one, just off timing with his receiver. It wasn't really his fault. I just thought there was a little bit of a miscommunication on that first throw. Second interception Trevor throws, there's a lot of heavy pressure. He forces a football.
That was a pretty bad pick, dude.
No. The third one I thought was horrendous. The second one I didn't think was that bad. There was a lot of pressure. Don't get me wrong. He forced it.
Yeah.
He forced that football. But there were no checkdowns. It was a bad play call. Second and nine, and there's no checkdowns at all. There's only receivers 10 yards or further down the field. I thought it was a bad play call, and it set Trevor up for failure to force that football. Third one, I'm not even going to try to excuse it. He underthrew the receiver by about 10 to 15 yards into basically triple coverage. But Trevor's completion percentage suffered because of the drops by the receivers. The defense was able to drop in and basically just play against the pass. Urban Meyer, the ratio, Carson, 51 attempts to just 15 rushes.
Yeah.
This isn't college anymore, Urban. You got to try to establish the run a little bit, especially when you have a 1,000-yard rusher in the backfield, which here's another issue I want to touch on with Urban's play calling. He gave most of the touches to Carlos Hyde instead of James Robinson. What are you doing, Urban?
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, Trevor looked awesome in the plays that he was on, dude. Like, he throws missiles, that deep ball to DJ Chark, right on the money. There were a ton of throws that were right on the money downfield that just got dropped by his receivers. And again, like, people can say, oh, I was most impressed with Mac Jones. Did you watch the same game that I watched? Mac Jones was not impressive at all. Mac Jones has a very simplified job. In a much better situation. Trevor Lawrence has the biggest expectations, the biggest load on his shoulders to carry an offense, and the most difficult situation, in my opinion, out of any of these quarterbacks. Like, don't get me wrong, Mac Jones did his job well, but he was certainly not super impressive. Trevor Lawrence was. Trevor Lawrence showed me the flashes of a generational quarterback. I don't care how many interceptions he throws this year. Peyton Manning led the league in interceptions in his rookie season, too. Trevor is a gamer. He is the best quarterback out of this class, and he's going to be the best quarterback in the NFL one day. I have no reservations about Trevor Lawrence. I thought he impressed the hell out of me, regardless of whatever stats you want to throw at me.
So here's the thing with this. When you're talking about how much somebody impresses you, expectations are very relevant. And the expectation is Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback prospect we've seen since Andrew Luck, and he can do basically everything on the football field at a high level. So yeah, you expect him to look pretty darn good. Given that, I still thought he had some exceptional moments, as you mentioned. And there were probably 9 balls in this game that hit receivers on the hands and ended up being dropped. What I will say is, I think some of that was due to him throwing a really hard, fast ball. I think that he needs to find a little bit more of the touch and the variety there. And I also thought that he just missed on a decent amount of throws in this one. Like, it wasn't the prettiest performance from Trevor Lawrence and the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he's under pressure in some of those situations. You go down 7-34 to the Texans, you weren't expecting that, but I thought 2 of the picks were pretty bad, so I thought the good moments were great, and he ends up with a big stat line as far as just raw output with the 3 touchdowns as well, and had a whole bunch of yardage because, as you mentioned, they leaned on him so much. But it definitely didn't look easy out there. It was not a stroll through the park for Trevor Lawrence. So I think that overall 55% completion on the day, 23 incompletions in total, it just wasn't the prettiest. And I think that that's fair. I don't think that that's on him as much as it is on his situation. But I do think you can look at a guy like Mac Jones and just say that he did a good job at what was asked of him. I don't know if he blew me out of the water either, because this is what we've known that he is. He's a pro-ready, average quarterback right from the jump. And that's what we saw. He was 29 of 39, 281 yards, a touchdown, lots of just quick-hitting play-action stuff, so much play-action, short passes, stuff like that. And he was accurate, and he was composed, and he was solid. So he's never going to be Trevor Lawrence, of course, but I would never expect him to be Trevor Lawrence. And if you're asking me who did their job better, who, relative to expectations, did what we want to see from them and maybe even a little bit more, it's more Mac Jones to me than Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, relative to roles and expectations,
well,
I'd agree.
Well, that's pretty important, Logan, when you're talking about a guy who wasn't even considered a first-round prospect until late in the year versus the guy who 3 years ago we knew was going to be the number one overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, you're right on that. I just thought that I was really underwhelmed on the whole as Mac Jones.
Like, he's an underwhelming player.
If you're asking me impressiveness-wise, out of the 3 quarterbacks that we saw extensive looks at, I'd say Mac Jones is 3 out of 3.
Really?
And yeah, I'll get into that. I thought look, there was something that played really well into Mac Jones's favor and something that did impress me a lot in the tape, and that's that he dealt with a ton of pressure from this Dolphins pass rush, and he dealt with it exceptionally well. He threw a lot of stuff over the middle, into the flats, a lot of checkdowns. And, you know, like, he wasn't completely hard. He has nice touch on his balls. Like, Max got that out, like, not different, very different from Trevor. Trevor throws bullets. Trevor throws missiles. Mm-hmm. Max got really nice soft touch on his balls. He had that perfectly placed 20-yarder over the middle to Aguilar that lobbed a white towards the sideline. And he's got good pocket instincts as well. And again, I thought first and second down, we saw a lot of issues with Mac where he might have been missing a couple balls here and there, and the Pats offense didn't try to go downfield. The Pats offense was exceptional on third down. And if that's your goal, just staying on the field, extending drives, Mac Jones is a guy who can do that.
Mm-hmm.
That is
their goal, though.
And yes, exactly. And that's why I would say I'm not going to take a massive, huge jump on Mac, because that's what the Pats want to do. They want to control the game. They want to play hard-nosed defense. They want it to be a slowed-down, grinded-out kind of game where they nickel and dime you. And I think Mac does that really well, and I think he gives him that ceiling moving forward. I just thought, Carson, some of these plays from Zach Wilson, dude, super impressive. Like, Carson, I want to hear your thoughts on Mac and Zach as well. I just thought some of those deep balls that Zach was throwing, they just looked Patrick Mahomes effortless. Mm-hmm. It looked like, and I know this is like a cliche that's kind of been beaten down by the rest of these guys, he just flicks his wrist, and it flies.
Yeah.
40, 50 yards downfield. And if we're judging it off that, off of impressiveness, off of what I saw from you as a raw quarterback talent, damn, Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson looked outstanding.
Sure, but the quarterback position is not one that is played with arm strength and wow moments. It's about consistency, it's about good decision-making, it's about accuracy. And both these guys are in way worse decisions, of course. Every play, Zach Wilson is running for his life out there. Like, he was eaten alive by, as I told you, Logan, that excellent Panthers pass rush.
Dude, he took a beating.
Dude, from the very first play, it was like he was terrified. And you're right. He had, on one of the first plays of the game, an incredible throw where he evades pressure, is rolling out, and gets that ball probably 50 yards downfield. But he overthrew the receiver slightly. There was another one where he threw a really nice deep ball, but ended up just not being perfect timing with the receiver there. So, sure, those are wow moments. And I threw some balls deep downfield, and he threw some balls from some wild positions where he's on his back foot and he's getting hit and he's trying to do all this crazy playmaker stuff, but he didn't succeed in doing that. Like, he had a rough day at the office, man. They had, if I'm not mistaken, 8 points is what they ended up doing, because they went for two deep into this game.
Yeah, and Patrick Mahomes would have had a rough day behind this offensive line. Yes, situations matter, and if you put Trevor Lawrence on the Patriots, they're a Super Bowl contender from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is, I want to.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What happened to quick hitting play action Jets offense that we saw in the preseason? Why is he in shotgun every time getting killed?
I'm glad you asked that question, Carson.
Yeah.
Because I have the answer. Damn, I misjudged the second and third string pass rushers for the Giants and Packers. I probably should have took a couple notes home from those games, because I was like, you know, dude, Zach really dealt with his pressure really well.
Uh-huh.
The second and third stringers were getting home, and he was dealing with that pressure well. When you go up against two top-tier pass rushers again, Carson, like you predicted on our show,
Yeah. Congratulations. Thanks.
Brian Burns and Hassan Reddick got home damn near every time. Zach was running for his life, as you said. But that was part of why I was so impressed. Not a lot of guys could step into this and keep going back and keep getting sacked and keep getting licked like that, mm-hmm. and keep coming back for more. Like, dude, there was just one play I distinctly remember in the game. Five defenders get home on Zach,
mm-hmm.
and he breaks three tackles. It ended up being like a loss of like 5 yards, but he evaded all that pressure. I don't know, dude. Like, Zach captivates me. Zach mm-hmm. is a super talented guy, and I just think if this offensive line ever improves, I have no questions about Zach and his ability as a passer and in his future in this league. I think he's going to be a stud.
Yeah, well, he never stopped trying to make plays. I will give him credit for that. But there also comes a point to which you're just evolving into chaos. And that's not really his fault.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I don't know, he would have had to throw a lot of balls away in this game. It was just rough. Like, I don't know that I can look at that and say, what an outstanding performance. Because really nothing went right mm-hmm. for the Jets at the end of the day.
So can I ask you then, so what is your official hierarchy then? Because you seem shocked that I had Zach too.
I would have Mac Jones above Zach Wilson, because I'm assessing this on how talented did I perceive them to be, and how did they do in their role? And I think Mac Jones did the best in his role. And I'm not saying that I would take him, certainly not over Trevor Lawrence or over Zach Wilson in a draft today. Those guys have way more upside, way more impressive high-end tools. But at the end of the day, most starting quarterbacks, especially on good teams, are asked to sit in the pocket, to make quick-hitting throws, and to make good decisions accurately. And that's what Mac Jones did. And he had a good game. So I think that he deserves props for that.
He had an okay game.
Yeah. He had a solid game. Sure, whatever you want to call it. I don't know that Trevor Lawrence with his 3 interceptions and Zach Jones with his 80 million sacks. And...
Zach Jones.
Jeez.
Take a breath, brother. All right, so your official ranking, though, you have Mac under Trevor still, though, correct?
Zach Wilson is what I meant to say. As far as most impressive this week?
Yes.
It's a toss-up to me between Mac and Trevor. I'll probably take Mac, though. Mac played a better game. Logan is slumped in his chair. Logan, I think you're overreacting. If you are shocked by the fact that Trevor Lawrence looked like that, no offense, you probably had to watch more Trevor Lawrence. The dude is a machine.
No, I wasn't shocked. I just, for him to step in and do this week one against the NFL, when again,
I didn't think defense... he played well by his standards. He missed a lot of throws.
And they ran the ball 15 times.
They were down 34-7. They got ran out of the building because he throws two picks early in the game. Look. I think that this is a compliment to Trevor Lawrence that I'm not just like, oh, wow, look at the prodigy who threw three picks and completed 55% of his passes. I expect more. And Mac Jones down on his luck.
Look at you, just Mac losing attack. The context that we had earlier. All those drops, all those perfectly placed balls
Lawrence. Not all those perfectly placed balls. All those balls that had too much heat on them in some situations. Some of them were bad drops, no doubt. We can agree to disagree.
While we're on these top three guys, I do want to touch on Justin Fields a little bit, too, with what we saw to him in Chicago. Not super long, but can Chicago just take the kid gloves off of Justin Fields? It's so obvious, Brian. Andy Dalton sucks.
He's not great.
No, he sucks.
Well, he's not great.
Just say it. No, he blows.
He's not the best.
Andy Dalton's a bum.
Yeah, he's not great.
They need to stop playing. I just take the kid gloves off Justin. Let him rock. Let him run this offense. And let him try to win you some games. You are just sinking this ship here in Chicago if you go with Dalton. Honestly, bro, I give my Andy Dalton a meter. I give like 3 weeks. Maybe 2 weeks. It's not going to be long.
Interesting. I don't know. I think that they're going to try to protect Justin Fields. But I agree with you. I think he's clearly better. All right. So in the show, we're just really going to try to get through stuff that we didn't touch on as much in that Monday show as we maybe wanted to. And the one thing that we didn't get to touch on at all was the Monday Night Football game, because we recorded before it was beginning and then as it was going on. From that Raiders-Ravens game, which ended up being just a wild performance that resulted in a Raiders overtime victory, who did that game tell us more about?
It's a good question. I'd say it told us more about the Raiders, I guess, just because our expectations were a little lower. We know what this Ravens offense can do, and I think we saw, I don't know, I think it told us a lot about both, and we can touch on those sides. I think it told us more about the Raiders, though, so I'll start with them. Play action-wise, I'm terrified. As a Pittsburgh Steeler fan, I am terrified of playing this team next week, and I think there's a very good chance this is a close, down-to-the-wire game. I just know, man, like, our safeties like dropping and gambling. Terrell Edmonds likes to drop and gamble and try to do that stuff. And we can't do that against Darren Waller. 19 targets, as you've been yammering about all week since that game, Carson. If we try to sell out on the run, we are going to get smoked. This is not an offense to toy around with or play with. Derek Carr is going to pretend to hand that ball off and lob one up to Darren Waller, lob one up to, you know, to Henry Ruggs. Like, this is a scary offense. Like, I think I drastically underestimated the Raiders. The AFC West is interesting, too, because I want to contextualize them. They're comparable to the Chargers, in my opinion, this year, and honestly comparable to the Broncos. This offense is super dynamic, and I expect them to put up points, coupled with, again, another takeaway here from the Raiders, their pass rush. When you can rush the passer like this, and when you can put up points like this, you are a team that I could pick game to game any week. You're a team that I could pick to the playoffs. I know we did this last year with the Raiders because we got all hyped up, and I know I picked them to the playoffs, but they're doing it to me again. This pass rush looked well improved. I want to touch on Max Crosby looks amazing. Carl Nassib was getting pressure, had that obviously game-sealing sack there at the end. And the big one, Carson, everybody hates on Cleveland Farrell, and I'm not going to take it.
Love it.
Cleveland Farrell is not a dominant edge rusher in the traditional sense that he's a really good pass rusher. He's not.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really good run stopper, though, and I think it's really underrated. I think people expected this kid to have, you know, 10 sack seasons out the gate. He's a good run stopper. You need to appreciate him for what he is and, you know, not what he's not. He's not a dominant pass rusher. I'd like him to be, too. I'd like all of the players in the NFL to be tremendous at what they do. Cleveland Farrell's not a good pass rusher, but he's a good run stopper. Give him credit where it's due. But overall, Carson, the Raiders might be a playoff team, and that's kind of my takeaway is that this offense is going to probably put up close to 30 points every night against average to mediocre defense. It was 30 points on a Ravens defense. Mm-hmm. They don't do that. And then when you can get the passer like this, I don't know, man. I just see a much higher ceiling for the Raiders than I originally anticipated.
Well, and they did this without establishing the run, really. Mm-hmm. Josh Jacobs did not have a great game. Kenyon Drake did not have a great game on the ground, but did have a great game as a receiver. And I just think that you touched on it. There is a depth of weapons here that initially before the year I kind of scoffed at and was like, you know, Hunter Renfro is your second best, second most established receiver. I don't know how that bodes. But it's not as much about everybody after Darren Waller as far as who's that next best guy as it is about the fact that you look at your fifth or sixth guy and even he can do pretty well. And I think this probably told us more about the Raiders because they had a monster game through the air. I think also, though, we expected this to be a really good offense. And I do think it told us something about the Ravens in that offensively, I think they are going to be able to survive their injuries because Tyson Williams was great. He was super efficient on the ground. And when you're throwing him and Latavius Murray out there, those are guys who can probably run at a starter caliber. And J.K. Dobbins would have been better, sure. But at the end of the day, they still went for 34 carries, 189 yards, and two touchdowns on the ground, 5.6 yards per attempt. Where they felt the loss to me was in that secondary, where you're down to Marcus Peters, and they just got shredded through the air. And it was not difficult for a lot of guys on this Oakland team to create separation. Like, we're talking about a Bryan Edwards going four catches for 81 yards. Zay Jones, Logan, just breaking completely free on that final play. So I think the Ravens are still going to be really good. I question how great that defense is going to be compared to expectations, but I'm not worried about the offense, and I think that Lamar is going to do some great things. And by the way, Darren Waller, I very much think so after this game, is going to do what my bold take was and break the tight end receiving yards record. He was targeted 19 times in this game. I think he caught one of the first seven balls thrown to him, and that was in like the first quarter. And then he just kept on getting those targets. He's a beast, and he's such a class above everybody else here, and he has such great chemistry from Derek Carr, and he can do it all as a receiver. He's just going to go berserk. He's going to have 1,500 yards.
Yeah, I completely agree. Over the middle of the field, when he splits like those two levels between the secondary and the linebackers, it's terrifying. I do want to touch on a point you made about the Ravens' offense, though. Carson, I don't necessarily think they're going to thrive on the ground, but I was really impressed with what they did, you know, play action-wise throughout this game. You saw a lot of stuff with Rashad Bateman over the middle, with this is a dangerous receiving core here, man. This is a deep receiving core here in Baltimore. You know, Hollywood Brown, Sammy Watkins played a huge role in this offense. I just think that there's a huge passing ceiling for this team. I just think they have to lean into it. So I guess, like, with how many points they did allow, I want to ask you about the Ravens and their secondary. Like, are you concerned? Like, do you think that does this concern you for them and what they can do against, like, the best air attacks in the league in the Josh Allens, the Patrick Mahomes of the world?
Oh, yeah. It concerns me a little bit. And I think that this is the kind of thing that can cap their ceiling. Because if you go from having last year what was up there for the best secondary in football to losing a couple key pieces in that group with Earl Thomas also out of the picture now, and obviously Marcus Peters being a much more relevant part of the picture even, that's going to obviously take down what you can do as a team overall. And against great offenses like the ones they're going to be facing, that's going to make the difference. So real quick, Logan, one more thing from last week. I'll ask you about one other AFC North team, and then we'll just move on to very quickly highlight the couple of games that we're most excited for this week. Are you a little bit excited about the Bengals? Because they go out there, they get that overtime win over the Vikings. I think I had them winning five games maybe. But this offense, a little bit exciting out there. What'd you think?
I had them winning five games. No, I'm super excited. And I said this after the draft. I think people hated on the Ja'Marr Chase pick way too much. Again, I think you saw that come to fruition here.
Yeah.
Yes, you could have got Penei Sewell, and I think Sewell's a lock. But you can go and retool that offensive line whenever you want. And I think they did a great job in the lower levels of the draft getting those depth guards and depth tackles. But how could this not be a home run pick? You're pairing up a collegiate receiver that was prolific with his quarterback, and they never lost any of that chemistry. Like, that chemistry was on display immediately.
Yep.
And you have three of the best route runners in the NFL on this roster. Carson, I see like a little mini Cowboys kind of offense forming here with all the talent they have and with how they run their offense. I don't mean as a dominant ground attack, but hey, Joe Mixon had 130 yards on the ground. I think this is like I really see like a mini Cowboys offense here with all the talent that they have, with how they run their offense, but especially just with the deep amount of receiving talent you have on this roster. I'm super excited for the Bengals. I don't know if they'll be able to defend anybody, but damn, they're going to put up some points.
The receiving core is just nasty, dude. Jamar looked immediately like a star. Every time he touched the ball, something dynamic happened. He was just creating separation, making big catches. And when your number two and number three are Tyler Boyd, who's averaged 970 yards over the last 3 years, and T. Higgins, who had 900-plus as a rookie last year, that's promising. And I just thought that Burrow played a clean, controlled, accurate game, did not seem to be negatively affected by the injury, was still confident out there, made good decisions. I don't know. They could be a competitive team that's maybe a little bit closer to 500, and this was a good win for them. Although I will say I'm also just concerned about the Vikings and don't think that they're good. Don't think that they have a playoff chance. Just not good in Minnesota, and they're going to need to make some big-time decisions pretty soon. All right, let's wrap this up here with just a couple minutes on what you think is the game of the week as we approach the holy day that is Sunday. What stands out to you with whatever that game is?
My game of the week, also my lock of the week.
Oh?
Ravens-Chiefs. And I'm riding with Kansas City. And the reason, it's tough. It's a 3.5-point game at this moment. And we've seen some really competitive matchups. Their first two games, Chiefs win 27-24 in overtime. 2019, they win 33-28. Just last season, they got kind of blown out by two TDs, 34-20. But Lamar has played one mediocre game against the Chiefs and two bad ones. Like, he has had a completion percentage in the 50s each and every game, 214 total yards in his first loss. In this most recent game, 180 total yards. They completely shut him down. First game, he has two TDs with a fumble lost. Most recent game, one TD with two fumbles and a fumble loss. Like, he struggled with these fumbling issues this season. He had three against the Raiders, three total fumbles in three career games, as I mentioned, against the Chiefs. That's why my dad calls him Loaf of Bread Lamar.
Can you explain that? Because he's holding the loaf of bread, but he drops it?
No, he's carrying, bruh, have you never held a loaf of bread?
Yeah, I've held a loaf of bread or two.
So, Carson, explain to me. Use an adjective. How do you carry, or an adverb, how do you carry a loaf of bread?
What kind of bread? Pumpernickel?
Softly.
Rye?
Softly was the correct word. Wonder bread.
Gingerly?
Yes, exactly.
Tenderly?
Shut up.
Okay. Just trying to help. You ask me a question, I answer the question.
You just started talking about bread types.
Well, I wanted to know. I would hold different bread differently. Sourdough is a much tougher bread. I can let that hit the ground and it'll be fine. You give me some pumpernickel, I don't want that hitting the bread. I don't want the pumpernickel to begin with. I don't want to eat pumpernickel. What do I look like to you? I'm not 80.
He was carrying, like white rye bread, right? Really soft?
White rye? I don't want rye to begin with.
All right, well, look. Lamar carries.
Could it be Killer Dave's whole wheat?
Can we get back to football?
Well, I don't like Killer Dave's whole wheat.
Jesus Christ. Don't bring up bread on Nerd Sesh. Rule number one. Lamar carries the ball like a loaf of bread. And that's the point I'm getting at. He just carries it softly, really softly. Anyway.
Oh.
You get it now.
I got it.
Lamar has yet to really have a great game against the Chiefs. Tyrann Mathieu comes back. I expect his defense to be better. The offensive line looked horrendous in week one for Baltimore. I expect Chris Jones to get a lot of pressure home. Alejandro Villanueva was getting eaten up on the right side. So, all in all, this last game was a two-touchdown blowout. Lamar has yet to play well against the Chiefs. I just don't expect this game to be close. I expect the Chiefs to run away with it. And again, with their secondary issues, I expect Pat to eat. This is not a good matchup for Baltimore, and I think 3.5 is much too nice.
Ravens starting 0-2 in a tough division with the injuries that they've had, just the morale blow. That would be very tough, and we'll see how they respond. I'll go very quickly. First of all, my lock of the week is the Falcons to cover against the Bucs, plus 12.5. This will be the second straight week that the lock of the week that I wanted to be my official lock of the week is betting against the Bucs to cover, because they're just getting some huge lines here. And I don't know, the Falcons are going to put up points. It's an in-division game. I just don't think the Atlanta team that we saw last week is the Atlanta team that we see going forward. I think they're going to be more creative and effective offensively. And I think there's a couple other good games. Titans-Seahawks is going to tell us something about both those teams, really, Tennessee, how do they respond? Vikings, Cardinals. If the Vikings lose that one convincingly, it feels like their season's almost over before it's even started. Rams, Colts, Bills, Dolphins. How do the Bills respond? Lots of good action coming up this week. And, of course, you can tune in to all of it. And then, the very next day, hear everything we have to say about it. So, if you enjoyed this show, here's where you can find us on Nerd Sesh. Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your audio content. On YouTube, we live streams our shows when we're not here in the studio. You can go and see a couple of those every week. We also do video breakdowns, video essays, as Logan hinted at. He's got one coming up soon. I should have one as well. You can follow us on social media. Twitter is at @nerd_sesh. Instagram and TikTok are both at @nerdsesh. And with that, as always, I've been Carson Brabber.
I've been Logan Camden.
And this was Nerd Sesh.